Today on New Horizons in Education, Dr. Scott Yenner, a Boise State political science professor, talking about the state of civic education among today's college students.
During times of national crisis, civic knowledge, civic engagement, civic literacy has traditionally gone up. You cannot name a document in American history that is not readily available on hundreds of websites. The question is, why aren't they having an impact on people? There are opportunities for securing justice, for making ours a more just society. And there are also limits to how just a society can be. It is knowledge of American history and government that helps us identify or distinguish between these two things.
I'm Bob Custra, president of Boise State University. Welcome to New Horizons in Education. Scott Yenner is an associate professor of political science at Boise State University. He teaches American political thought, the history of political thought, and a core course in contemporary political thinking. The U.S. Department of Education has awarded more than $3 million in grants to Dr. Yenner and his colleagues to bring professional enrichment to American history teachers in Canyon County, the Magic Valley, and Boise. Dr. Yenner is a member of an advisory panel for the Intercollegiate Studies Institute, which annually measures civic literacy. The Institute's latest report is entitled, Failing Our Students, Failing America, Holding Colleges Accountable for Teaching America's History and Institutions. It was released in September. Dr. Yenner also serves as chairman of the board of the Foundations Academy, a local private school emphasizing classical education. Scott Yenner, welcome to New Horizons in Education.
Thank you very much.
Well, you know, it was Robert Hutchins, the president, once upon a time president of the University of Chicago and the great books guru, who said, the death of democracy is not likely to be an assassin from ambush. It will be the slow extinction from apathy, indifference, and undernourishment. You seem to be focused through the work of the Intercollegiate Studies Institute on this issue of the undernourishment of our students, both in high school and college, but especially in college. Could you tell us about this Intercollegiate Studies Institute and just what they're attempting to do here?
Well, most of the approaches to assessing how successful universities are end up emphasizing critical thinking ability or communication abilities. And what the ISI is attempting to do is to go toward content-based assessment of what universities do. So annually now, we put together a 60-question multiple-choice question, and we administer that survey at 50 universities across the campus, both to freshmen and to seniors, to figure out if seniors do markedly better or worse on content questions about American history. We get together in January and February and write the questions and figure out what topics they should be on, and then assess it during the end of the spring semester and compare freshman and senior. And what we found is that at most universities, the actual content knowledge of seniors is lower than the content knowledge of freshmen. And there are several reasons for that, the most important of which is that colleges, while they talk about civic education or civic literacy being important in their mission statements, don't deliver on that in any of the requirements that they have in their curriculum. So while they want people to know about American government, very few require American government courses. While they want people to have a perspective on American history, very few, in fact, you know, almost none now require an American history course, much less any kind of cluster or sequence of courses in American history. So you don't know what you don't teach. And that outcome is seen in the annual assessments that we're doing.
Now, the 50 universities that are being studied here, is this intended to be somewhat of a random sample? So you have public and privates, you have large and small, you have research and non-research universities. Is that fair to say?
We have all of those. It's not random, but it's not completely picked out ahead of time. We put the universities into two categories. One is we try to get a good bunch from top 50 universities, and we use U.S. News and World Report rankings, and then take a sample from that. And then we aim to get a cross section, so we get some liberal arts, some state schools, but the emphasis is to show that what happens at the most prestigious universities often trickles down to other universities. And if there's a negative impact on the university at the prestigious universities, the hypothesis is that probably is trickling down to regional and non-flagship universities in state systems and at private colleges.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's go back to the finding that the seniors know more than the freshmen.
Less.
Here's the problem I'm having with that. If you told me that the seniors knew about the same as freshmen, it might make a little more sense. But the fact that the freshmen know more than the seniors suggests that something must have been going on in high school that worked for them. And then what happens in the college years? Okay, so they weren't getting more civic education, but what are they doing? I mean, I'm expected to forget things at my age, but apparently we have 18 and 19-year-olds forgetting a lot of things by the time they're seniors.
Yeah, let me go back and clarify something. About half of them, there is a slight bump up. So where people score, say, 50% on one question, they'll score 50.3%, will get it right on the next one. So, I mean, mostly it shows that there's not much change. Mm-hmm. At about 15 of the universities, there's a negative effect. And those actually end up being the most prestigious universities. Georgetown, Yale, Princeton, there's actual a decline in civic knowledge. At some, a very few, there is a marked increase in them. I think there may be five in the sample that show a marked increase. Those universities are ones that emphasize American government and American history and so on.
Why would it be that the most prestigious universities in America show a decline in civic knowledge from freshman to senior year?
Well, I mean, that's a great question. There are no doubt a wide range of explanations. One is the one I think we gave before about things not being required, what's not taught. Others, you know, may be the negative factor may be that the general ed requirements at these universities tend to undermine what we think we know of American history, American government. But, you know, that's if we could figure out the answer to that question, it would be great.
Yeah. Well, it does seem to me, and I know this is going to be a blanket statement that doesn't apply to all elite or prestigious universities, but just from my reading of the Chronicle of Higher Education, I know Brown University really capitulated to the students over the years, and there's hardly anything required at Brown these days. And it does seem to me that you read in the news, in higher education news, that at the prestigious universities, faculties really have kind of given up on what we call general education here at Boise State and a required curriculum that is the preparation for the major or the concentration. That may have something to do with it.
Well, I think it has a lot to do with it. Yeah. I'm a member of another organization, National Association of Scholars, and they did a curriculum review of 100 universities and took 4 points, 1914, 1939, 1963, and 1992, or something close to those dates, and looked at the curriculum at these universities, what's required to get a general ed degree. And what you notice over the years is a gradual decline of both structure and content. That is, the general ed has shrunk, and the principle of student choice to wend your way through the general ed requirements has become the only value that you can tell is emphasized in the general ed. Mm-hmm. So the size has gone from about 50%, or actually in 14, about 65% of most of the at most of these universities, to what is now about a third. And there's no courses, save two at most universities, that are now required of students. So when the university doesn't offer any kind of idea of what is needed to be an educated person, it's not surprising that that's what you get out. Mm-hmm. No coherent idea what an educated person is.
Now, is this a new problem or simply one that's getting a lot of attention now that we have an organization like the Intercollegiate Studies Institute doing this longitudinal data? First of all, how far back? This is only a few years, I would assume.
It is only a few years back. The sense that that we get on that question is, I think the answer is yes and no. That is, during times of national crisis, I think it's been the general pattern for people to be reminded of the importance of the universal or the public. And in these national crises, civic knowledge, civic engagement, civic literacy has traditionally gone up. When there is no national crisis, people tend to be more satisfied in their private lives and in their careers, and civic knowledge, engagement, literacy goes down. The unique thing about this time is that if we are indeed in a time of national crisis, a war on terror, it coincides with decline of civic literacy engagement and knowledge. And so it's unique in that respect.
Mm-hmm. You know, I can't help but be reminded of a little section of Jay Leno's show. He goes out onto the street and he asks these usually young people basic questions about American government or American history. And it is absolutely the most embarrassing moment. I mean, it gets so bad that you really want to turn off the TV rather than hear people say that they don't know who the vice president of the United States is or whatever. And it's about that bad. There's no exaggeration. So I guess I have to ask the question whether or not this research you're doing and these rather dramatic findings, does the average person think this is important? I mean, is there any way to judge whether or not we've struck a responsive chord here with this data, or is this all in some little office out east where the results are there? Now the question, who cares?
Well, that's a big question. I think when I told my wife that Americans are mostly ignorant and apathetic about civic topics, she said she didn't know that and she didn't care. And, you know, that's going to really determine the answer to that question is going to determine any kind of solution that we might have to this. When you look at curriculum and high schools and such, you see that these things are required. Despite, you know, the emphasis on science and math that is no doubt there, American history, 2 years, for instance, here in Idaho, is required of high schoolers in American history. They need to take American government and Idaho government. And so, you know, we're leading the horse to the water. The question is, why isn't he drinking? Or if he's drinking, why isn't it staying in his body? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when you look on the internet, I mean, just to take another example, you cannot name a document in American history that is not readily available on hundreds of websites. These things are out there. The question is, why aren't they having an impact on people? Mm-hmm.
Well, I hate to ask this next question because I don't know the answer, and some say you should never ask a question you know the answer to, but let's get up close and personal, as they say. Boise State University, the state of Idaho, whether it's Boise State, College of Idaho, University of Idaho, Idaho State, how does the state of Idaho's higher education institutions compare? You may not know the answer to all of these questions when it comes to other schools, but what do we require in general education in Idaho? Well, probably should start with Boise State.
Well, the two things that I think are required of everyone at Boise State are, there's two mandatory classes, both in English composition. And then the general ed requirements is a pattern that's followed in most universities, distribution requirements, where students need to take three or four courses in three different areas, natural sciences, social sciences, and humanities. And there's no courses within any of those distribution requirements that are required of Boise State students. Mm-hmm. So a very rational student who doesn't want to learn how to write can easily make his way through the general ed requirements without having to learn to take courses that require writing. Just go with multiple choice questions. Mm-hmm. A student who doesn't want to read that much can wend his way through the general ed requirements if he's smart, and find courses that don't require much by way of reading. Mm-hmm. And Boise State is, I think, very representative of both prestigious and non-prestigious, both public and private institutions around the country, in emphasizing student choice and academic freedom as the two principles that will help design the general ed requirement. Mm-hmm. And maybe we can talk about that, mm-hmm. that you know, the university has a mission, and it states what a mission is. Does it want to fulfill the mission? And can it require both its students and its faculty to help it fulfill this mission? If you're going to take something like, let's just say, American government seriously, and you want people to have a basic knowledge of American government, the university can reflect its values and its mission by requiring such things. It's done in Texas, right? This is the old joke in the political science profession, is that the Texas state government is like a little employment agency of political scientists because it requires both American government and Texas history and government to be taught at every one of its state colleges. And that reflects its execution of its mission. Mm-hmm. And so such things can be done. The question is always, do you want to limit students' choice, and do you want to require, put the resources behind making such a requirement be delivered by a particular department?
Mm-hmm. Well, when I was teaching, my first teaching assignment, as a matter of fact, was at Lincoln Land Community College in Springfield, Illinois. And every student who entered Lincoln Land Community College and expected to get an Associate of Arts degree had to take American Government. And my colleagues and I saw every single student that came through the program. And that was accepted practice. That wasn't controversial. That was not a great debate. That was like, well, why wouldn't a student have a basic understanding of American government at the college level, starting in their general education work? So is that the task for us here at Boise State and other universities to get to the point where we make more sense of this general education requirement than we currently do?
Well, it may be. If we're going to say that we want people to be informed citizens, it seems to me that we'd want them to know a couple things. We'd want them to know the basic outlines of American history. We'd want them to know the basic structure and purpose behind American government. So the university can do one of two things. It can drop that as a goal, or it can put its money where its mouth is and fulfill that goal by requiring such things. You know, the dissolution of content and structure and the university level that we see here at Boise State, as I said before, is a nationwide phenomenon.
Right.
And a lot of places are beginning to raise questions about whether or not the menu approach is an adequate general ed philosophy. Mm-hmm. And that conversation is, I think, starting here at Boise State, thanks to your liberal arts initiative. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what Scott's referring to is the fact that we do have a group of faculty that are exploring the role of liberal arts at Boise State University, making sure, in fact, that both in our general ed curriculum and in our majors, we are addressing the issues that are uppermost in our minds as educators, and that is, how do you produce the good citizen, as the Greeks referred to him? Let's talk for a moment about why this is important. Does the Intercollegiate Studies Institute, which has promoted this annual survey, discuss much about what difference this makes? I mean, if you get to the end of the senior year and you don't know as much as the freshman, how do we know that makes a citizen less good, if you will, mm-hmm. than the citizen who majored in political science?
No, that's a great question. You know, what do you need to know in order to be a good citizen? Now, the American founders, you know, obviously reflected and discussed this topic quite a bit. And there are somewhat extreme cases. Thomas Jefferson's famous quote about there's never been a free and unintelligent citizenry mm-hmm. in the world is, I think, a famous kind of extreme formulation of that. What do you need to be an educated citizen, or what knowledge does a citizen need? Now, we have a representative democracy, which means that we delegate the specialties to representatives, both in the executive and legislative branch. We expect them to be more knowledgeable of affairs than citizens. Citizens have jobs, families, lives. Representatives, not so much. And they're busy people, and part of their job is to have more specialized knowledge of what's going on. So what does a citizen need to know? I would submit that there are three or four things that we want to think about in this regard. The most important to me is that a knowledge of American government and American history gives people perspective. Gives people perspective on the nature of current problems. Are these as bad as this problem? Or is this depression as bad as the Great Depression? Is civil discourse now so deteriorated compared to, say, 1836 or something? And people with perspective generally are more moderate. That is, they don't expect everything at once. And without any kind of perspective being taught, we can expect people to have unrealistic expectations and therefore distrust of government, questions about its legitimacy. So, you know, that's a really important thing. I think citizens need to be able to distinguish between private and the public good, their own good and what's good for the public. Mm-hmm. And that requires some reflection on the public. And, you know, this is about the only time in our lives the college experience about the only time in our lives where we're afforded the freedom to actually have reflections about these questions. And a third idea that third reason that this could be important is that there are opportunities for securing justice and for making ours a more just society. And there are also limits to how just a society can be. It is knowledge of American history and government that helps us identify or distinguish between these two things. So it's not like if you don't know math, you can't build a bridge. That's not what civic education or learning is. And I don't think, you know, the survival of the country is at stake. To me, it's a question of vision. What kind of populace are we going to have? And what kind of populace does the university hope to contribute to making? And, you know, I don't think like in 4 years, we don't do something, the nation's through. I think those kinds of warnings that people often put forward detract from the real character of the problem. It's a vision question. Mm-hmm. What unites us as a people? What's common among Americans? Do we just occupy the same land? Well, one part of a community is a shared notion of ideas or government, what is advantageous and just. And that requires thought and cultivation. And our schools are intentional about that, but they can be a lot more intentional about that.
You're listening to Scott Yenner. He's an associate professor of political science at Boise State University, and we're talking about a report, The Coming Crisis in Citizenship, which he has participated in, and learning more about the decline of civic knowledge among our college students. Let's go back to the case of the college or university that has a general education requirement that does not include history or political science specifically. It, as you said, is a smorgasbord approach where you can take any one of a number of things. Students, as you alluded to earlier, are working their way around these courses. But I wonder if you could comment on whether the Institute has done any work on where students are putting in their time, if it's not in history and government and the knowledge of civic education.
I cannot answer that question with any authority. What we're talking about when we're talking about what a university represents, at least in part, is the general ed. This is what our statement is on what every educated person should know. We've named the Liberal Arts Committee Learning for Life. We want to emphasize that this is where the non-work, non-recreation related stuff happens. This is how human beings learn to use their leisure and learn to be free. Mm-hmm. So I can't really comment on what they're doing, although it would be a great study for someone to undertake. There's so many transcripts out there to be analyzed.
Right, exactly. You know, when I was teaching at Loyola University in Chicago, we had a program called the Taft Institute. And the Taft Institute was basically a collection of political scientists at the university that would offer these summer institutes for high school teachers of government, civics, history, and help bring them up to date. I guess I have to ask to what extent this problem of civic literacy in college, or lack thereof, is related to what's going on in high school, and whether we have programs that help keep our high school teachers up to date, most importantly, to help keep their teaching relevant so students aren't turned off by the time they leave high school. And hey, guess what? There's the problem. By the time they get to college, it's like, hey, man, if I don't have to take this course again, I'm not going to take it because it wasn't that much fun when I took it in high school.
Yes, that's one of the things I'm involved with here at Boise State. We've secured through the Department of Education several large grants for local school districts where we can help both offer remedial education for teachers and some reflection on what kinds of methods to make these, to make the content knowledge of the teachers transferable into the classroom. And there are also great programs put on by the Ida Humanities Council and the National Council for Humanities, or National Endowment for Humanities. Mm-hmm. They're involved in trying to make this stuff available to improve teaching of history. And, you know, I think the state has put an emphasis on this, that American history is important. The big problem that the teachers face, and that I think studies bear out as being the big problem, is along with the decline of literacy, there's a larger problem, and that's the decline of reading. People read less. They read fewer books. They understand those books less well. the number of people who've read books for pleasure in the, say, 18 to 24 cohort is now under 50% in the last 6 months. It's very difficult as a teacher to teach American history or American government without reading. It's good to keep things relevant, but reading is really an essential part of this. And this trend, you know, there's been studies recently put out by the National Endowment for the Arts that summarize basic studies about reading, showing really an alarming decline in reading. It's probably down about 33% in the last 20 years. And of course, reading ends up being very closely connected with civic engagement and other things. Readers generally are engaged. People who don't read generally aren't. So, and this is something that I know every teacher of philosophy, political science, history has to deal with here at Boise State, the decline in the both ability and desire to read among mm-hmm. students. Mm-hmm. And so you're faced with a real question, which is, how do you teach history without reading, or to a people who doesn't want to read as much? And this is, I think, the big dilemma that high school teachers face here in the Valley. And it trickles up to us at the university. Mm-hmm.
When I was in Illinois, I kicked off a program called Read for a Lifetime, which was aimed at high school students reading outside of their requirements. And teachers loved it. They thought it was a great opportunity to advertise the importance of reading outside of class. And they were the ones that chose the books, and I just simply kicked off the program. But I must say, universities in general do have a new program that we now have adopted here, the freshman book read, and it becomes the campus book read. But aside from that, I don't think our literature faculties do enough, and it's not just literature, it's really across the board. I'm not so sure faculties do enough to encourage reading beyond the required reading. I mean, and I don't mean in courses, I mean the university family, the campus community doesn't seem to stress the importance of reading. So why is it any shock that we have these numbers you referred to?
Yeah, the vicious circle. Reading requires cultural knowledge because there are references to things in most things we read that presuppose that we know certain things. And how do you gain cultural knowledge? Through reading. And so this is the vicious circle that you end up dealing with. But as an instructor, finding things that you have in common with the students and that the students have in common with each other is become increasingly difficult. You used to be able to refer to, say, things in the Bible or episodes in American history to illustrate, you know, questions about how liberty and equality relate to another or something like that. But that idea of the common is, you know, on the decline. It's very difficult to find. I settled for movies for a while, TV shows, but I don't watch any TV. And I don't go to movies anymore. So I generally put forward a fictional or history book at the beginning of each class so we can share that history and always refer to that history for examples in courses. But, you know, having a common cultural language is essential when teaching larger issues about justice and freedom and equality. And
well, Scott, we've run out of time, but I do appreciate your being on the show today and talking about civic literacy and the challenge that we have at university and colleges across the country, and most importantly, for being a member of the faculty here in political science. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
And I'll just say to all of our listeners, I guess we have to gear up our own global civic literacy, so we should all go buy a book. And we should read The Economist next week. How's that?
And Thucydides.
There you go. There you go. Scott Yenner, thank you for joining us on New Horizons in Education. Next week, a special encore show with Boise State history professor Charles O'Dall talking about the ancient roots of many of our popular Christmas traditions we enjoy today. The engineer for today's show is Eric Jones. Research provided by Kathleen Craven. Our producer is Janelle Brown. I'm Bob Custer. Please join me next week as we talk to the people who help shape our world in both the Treasure Valley and beyond on New Horizons in Education.